Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 23rd of May, Anno Domini 2015, and you, you lucky people. You're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. As you can tell from our intro, Steve Ray is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest, flogging his horse, heading for the hole in the wall. Where he will stand off thousands of Texas Rangers.
We just can't keep him out of trouble.
We just can't.
I know.
He's
beyond control.
Yeah. Right.
Forget it. That was a lost cause how many years ago?
Exactly.
20?
All right, here's the news. Microsoft released another update for Windows 10 on Wednesday, but warned users with an advanced micro devices or AMD graphics chipset to expect, and I quote, frequent crashes of the new Edge browser. Gabriel Auel, A-U-L, the engineering general manager for Microsoft's operating system group, spelled out the improvements in build 10122, but before he launched into that list, he called out a big bug. If you're using an AMD GPU, that's graphics processor unit, you're likely to run into frequent crashes in Microsoft Edge, which is still branded as Project Spartan in this build, Auel wrote in a company blog. We're working with our partners at AMD on new drivers, which should prevent the issue, and we'll update this post once they're released. Edge is the brand new browser that will be the default on Windows 10 devices. AMD is best known for its Radeon graphics cards and chipsets. In the meantime, users can avoid the problem by switching to the Windows 10 Slow Ring, the slower of two release tracks, to, as Auel said, sit this one out, meaning build 10122. And Auel touted several changes to Windows 10, including improvements to the start menu and start screen and how they can be toggled by the user, the debut of a new tab page in Edge, and changes to how the OS maps an app to a specific file type. Excuse me. The new tab page, which the company showed off last month at its Build Developers Conference, is a dramatic overhaul of the current thumbnails-only approach used by Internet Explorer 11. In Edge, the new tab page, which appears whenever the user requests a new tab, what an odd thing that is much busier, filled out not only with images of the most frequently visited websites, but also news and other content from MSN, as well as apps Microsoft happens to highlight. The latter is yet another hint at how aggressive Microsoft will be in promoting Windows Store apps, one of the biggest revenue generators in the company's strategy to monetize the increasingly free OS. Howell also pointed out that going forward, the updates would fine-tune the new OS, but not make major changes. From here on out, you'll see fewer big feature changes from build to build, and more tuning, tweaking, stabilizing, and polishing, Auel said. Microsoft has yet to narrow its broad this summer release timeline. Microsoft's Edge and our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like to remind you is Microsoft's Edge browser beta crashes with AMD graphics cards. And the choices are, who cares? Give me my Edge. I can wait. I use a different browser. I'll leave a comment in the forums and browse what now? So far, we've got 26 votes. Of course, browse what now is winning. 8 of you have said you'd leave a comment in the forum. Of course, most of you haven't. But that's okay. And if you want to leave a comment in the forum, and you should, scroll down on the right and under fascinating stuff, you'll see the forums. And the second choice is the poll discussion. And the first item is 23 May 15, Microsoft's Edge browser beta crashes with AMD graphics cards. And of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
They did comment. They didn't say anything because that you know, comments come along as much as Microsoft updates.
Yeah, that's
they're
exactly
very far
right.
and few between.
Well, Microsoft is planning on changing that. They're going to update the way Linux and the Mac update.
Yeah,
and they're going to do it all, you know, as bits and pieces come along.
Uh huh.
And we talked about that, I think, last week, and that's both good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's good because you get more frequent updates. It's bad for businesses because businesses like to thoroughly test updates before they allow them to be installed in the network. So it means that you're going to have one busier person, or they're or they're going to go back to, you know, one Tuesday a month, and all those backed up things are going to have to be done. Well, we'll see how companies
this
handle
should be
it.
Interesting.
Yeah, we'll see how companies handle it, but that is what it is. And like I said, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Larry did from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys.
How are you?
I'm fine today, and you? You sound good.
Peachy.
I have a question. How do you completely remove Google Chrome from Win 8?
You uninstalled it and it didn't go?
I haven't tried uninstalling it yet. Quite frankly, I'm used to finding add and remove in Win 7, but this is a touchscreen Lenovo Win 8, and after about an hour, I couldn't find it.
Yeah,
I'm wondering, because I haven't tried it, because I hate Windows 8.
Yeah.
Whether Revo Uninstaller will install on that.
Theoretically, Revo Uninstaller will work, but just fairly immediately, the one nice thing Windows Microsoft did in Windows 8 is the search button, or search box.
Search.
So if you've got a touch screen, so if you swipe left from the right corner of the screen, it brings up what's called the charms bar. That gray bar with a few things in it.
Okay.
The top thing is a search. And if you search for remove, one of the things you'll find is add remove programs.
Okay. Lord. Okay. Then add.
And then you should be able to uninstall Google Chrome.
And then reinstall it.
Absolutely. What Dave was talking about is a program called Revo Uninstaller.
R-E-V-O?
Yes.
Revo
Uninstaller. And that's at RevoUninstaller.com.
Okay.
And it's a free program that is very good at removing, well, dang near anything from a machine. There is both a free and a professional version.
Okay.
You certainly would get more with the paid version.
Okay.
But the freeware version is good enough for government work, I guess. And it works on everything. One of the things that I suggest, and Dave does as well, suggests that people do is when you build a new machine, the very first thing you put on is Revo Uninstaller.
Yes.
So that what will happen there is that it will essentially watch in the background as you install things and know where everything is. It's pretty good at doing that anyway, and certainly with common programs like Google Chrome, it knows where all the bits and pieces are.
Okay.
But it if you install anything semi-unusual, like a program for work or whatever, you're kind of better off. If you have Revo Uninstaller installed before you install the program.
And essentially what you're doing is you're keeping your machine more efficient also, because by putting Revo Uninstaller in there, it goes in and literally takes out all the entries in the registry. The bad thing about Windows add remove programs is all they do is in the registry is turn off that one bit where it references all those entries in the registry.
But it leaves them there.
Yeah, and it leaves them there. So it just makes your registry get bigger and bigger as you add and so-called remove programs. They don't really get removed if you use the add remove program. This is where Revo Uninstaller does a far more efficient job of getting that junk out of there.
Okay. All right, I'm going to go jump on it right now, see what
happens.
There you
go.
Good luck.
As usual, you guys are still the greatest in the known universe.
That's what we like to hear. Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, we like Revo Uninstaller. We like it a lot. As Dave said, it fixes one of the truly stupid things that Microsoft did. You may have noticed over time your startup for Windows gets slower and slower and slower. Well, the main reason for that, of course, is that the registry is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the registry is loaded first every time you start Windows. So if you keep it lean and mean, your startup time will be faster because it doesn't just load it in. It has to parse it as well and check all the programs that it's supposed to have in and blah, 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 blah. And so, it'll ignore those pieces, but it's still got to load them in and then run past them to find the next thing. So it does increase your load time. And depending on how much installing and uninstalling you've been doing of programs, it could increase significantly.
Yeah.
Now, that is not documents. So if you save a lot of documents or pictures or music or whatever and then erase them from your computer, that's not in the registry. So that doesn't count for that.
Right.
It's strictly for programs that you install and uninstall. But folks like Dave and I, we do that constantly because we're always testing things.
Yeah.
So the registry just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Revo Uninstaller will fix all of that. And it also has a cleanup mode where you can run it and say, clean up my registry. And what it'll do is it'll find all those programs where the bit's been turned off and remove them. So that also, if you've been running Windows 7, say, for a while, that will clean up all of that. Also, of course, if you're still running Windows 7, you should know that it's past end of life. End of life was January for Windows 7. So there is no more update, no more support. And so you are very vulnerable. So you should at least be running Windows 8. And now is a pretty good time to buy Windows 8. I know everybody hates it, but buying Windows 8 now means Windows 10 is free for the first year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you buy Windows 8 now, you'll have a year from the time Windows 10 is introduced to upgrade for free. And it will mean your machine is running better. Now, again, you want to make sure that it's at least a 2 gigahertz processor, at least 4 gig of RAM. And even at that, I've mentioned this before. I finally bought a laptop with Windows 8 actually on it. It's a quad-core processor. It's 8 gig of RAM. It's the slowest freaking machine I own. And I've got an ancient Mac and running Linux and an ancient Asus laptop running Linux. And they're both faster than this machine.
Isn't that pretty pathetic?
It really is. It really is. If I didn't actually need a Windows machine, it would have Linux on it and be twice as fast. It annoys the heck out of me every dang time I turn the thing on. Sorry. Sorry, everyone. Rob's going to text you now and say, it's too low. Put him down.
Yeah. You're blowing the levels.
You're blowing the levels. But yeah, now is the time, if your machine will handle it, now is the time to get Windows 8 at least now, because Windows 7 is no longer supported.
And 10 comes out, when is that?
Who knows? Honestly, who knows? Microsoft has not said. They said this year, they said second half of the year, which could mean December 31st.
Yeah.
So we don't know yet exactly when it is. The prevalent theory is September-ish. But we don't really know. All righty. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and that show is Soundbites, right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Oh, and I should probably mention that because Steve Ray is not here, we do not have the Ustream up. And I apologize for that, but you should still be able to pick us up online over the stream. We're better. We've got a face for radio, so
yes,
we're better not
we
be
leave
visible
it there.
Anyway. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ron from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Ron. What's up?
Yeah, hi, guys.
And can you roll your R's while you talk, please?
Yeah, I've been hearing that Windows 10 is a free download, but after 90 days, you have to buy it online, and if you don't make backups, you can lose everything. If you don't go to Windows 10, is there any truth to this?
I have not heard that yet. No, it certainly is.
It certainly is possible. It's Microsoft. They can do what they want.
In any case, according to Microsoft, anybody who has Windows 7 as well, really? Windows 8.1 or... will be able to upgrade to 10 for free as long as they do so within 1 year. In any case, and always, you should make sure that you
have
backup everything. Always, always. You should be doing that anyway.
Well, yeah, that should be just a given.
Right.
That shouldn't even be the question of changing operating systems or anything else.
Speaking of backups, let me... once again, thank the patron saint of soundbites, Jerry Seward, for retrieving our website from the dead. So, yeah, but you according to this, according to everything I've been reading over the weeks, Windows 7 I just apparently was not paying attention to. But so you can upgrade. So I guess I kind of lied to Larry there about Windows upgrading to Windows 8 now, but. Windows 10 will be a free upgrade as long as you do it within a year of the introduction.
Okay. All right. Now, if you go to Windows 8, can you get 8.1? And I understand, is that anything going to be like XP?
No. 10 is going to be closer to 7, which is like XP.
Yeah.
But 8.1 is the one that everybody hates because of the way it's set up.
Okay.
And that was also true of 8 itself. So, it appears that there is no 90 days and pay for it. It is strictly, as far as we know right now, maybe somebody has better knowledge, but Windows 10 will be free for anyone who has 7 with Service Pack 1 or 8.1.
As long as they
get it within a year.
I'm running 7, and I like it. I have it set up the way I like it and everything. And every time I get what I want, they end up saying there's no more upgrades or this or that. And then, you know.
Well, right. Because Windows 7 has reached end of life. Microsoft does not make money if you keep old versions of the operating system. So by making them obsolete, anybody still running XP is just a ticking... well, anybody running XP is probably already completely owned. So I hope anybody listening now who runs XP is not keeping anything personal on their machines. But yeah. Windows 7 people are just a ticking time bomb at this point.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to confirm that then.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yep. Yeah, I'm running the beta of Windows 10 as a virtual under
how
Linux.
How are you liking it so far?
It's okay. I mean, it's, you know, I stopped being actually excited by operating systems a long time ago. But it is so much more like 7 than 8 that it will make people very, very happy. when you it ha- you when it boots up, you go to a desktop, and it has a start button. It's not a button; it doesn't say start. It doesn't, you know? It's just
yeah,
a little
it's just
logo,
a little button,
but it's the little logo. And you click on it, and it comes up with a list of programs like it always did. And then on the right of that, instead of things like computer and programs and that, what you see there is actually a few of those tiles that you can scroll up and down in. So that's still there, but it's now much less annoying. And also, of course, according to the latest update, you can change that to be however you want it to be. So
well, that's cool.
There's a lot of
it'll build the confidence back up because nobody wanted 8.
Windows 8 has been possibly the biggest flop, and that includes Vista and ME.
I hate to say it. You know how much I love ME.
Yeah, yeah.
That was totally true.
I think so.
Because it was such a dramatic change from the whole interface and everything else. ME just didn't work with a lot of other stuff. That was a piece of junk.
Right.
But this was changing the whole interface and expecting folks to learn after they've had Windows for decades, all of a sudden to look like a tablet.
Right.
No.
Well, and people who have tablets, Microsoft wants to sell the Surface. The laptop I bought does have a touchscreen. So Windows 8 runs okay on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the things that it's just annoying to do with a mouse are easier to do with a touchscreen.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that.
Right.
But because they don't give you a choice, people who tried to put it on old machines that don't have touchscreens are really angry. I mean, not just annoyed,
right,
but actually angry. Yep. And Microsoft has realized they can't just run roughshod over people. They're going to sit there and
hit them where it really hurts with their dollars.
Yep.
By not getting that operating system.
Yep. So, and Microsoft is realizing that people don't want to pay for operating systems. Even Apple is beginning to realize that people don't want to pay for operating systems. So they're finding other ways to make money.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Yeah, I got a question for you. When you say 7 isn't supported, isn't it in extended support at this point?
Yes. Are you working for a major corporation who paid for that extended support?
No.
Then you don't have any support.
Cumulative updates and patches and everything else.
You will get security updates during the extended support, but that is all you will get.
Right.
So if they find an error in the operating system that could cause data loss or a crash, hey, too bad.
Yep. Your loss.
Okay, so that's what extended support is.
Right, right. You will get, and in fact, you won't even get the minor security updates. Right?
Just the major.
Just yeah, you got to hit the major
ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Extended support is not...
And they won't be very timely in coming out with them either.
No, they won't. You don't get to be first.
Because in the past, 2 weeks or 2.5 or 3 weeks, actually, I've gotten a ton of updates. Just, last week I got one, and then yesterday I got another one.
Yeah.
And it was back to back.
Yep, yep.
In the past, three
weeks. That's because
there
are a number of very huge, very bad holes that were found in Windows.
Yeah.
Those holes, by the way, go all the way back to XP, and XP did not get the update.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, that was just a quick question.
Right, so basically what you get is if they've done a product design change or a feature change or a feature addition, you don't get that. You don't get any programming support, any of that stuff. What you do get is security updates, and that's... The information is still in the knowledge base, so if you wanted to look something up, you could do that. Certainly paid support still works. But that's pretty much it. If you've paid for extended hotfix support, then you will get the non-security updates. But extended support means you only get the more important security updates. Paid support, if you're paying for it, which means phone calls and that stuff, and any information in the knowledge database won't be taken out yet.
Okay.
And that's good until, I should tell people that the end of extended support for Windows 7 will be January 14th, 2020. But remember that that means no real support unless you're paying for it.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yep. So, yeah, people have been getting, and I hear this question all the time. I'm still getting updates. You're getting the updates for the really egregious security holes in Windows.
Yeah, they can.
The small security holes, they don't care.
Forget it.
And that's what you're getting. And like I said, the last four, actually, big updates go all the way back to Windows XP, but you'll know, you people still using XP will notice you did not get those updates because Microsoft does not care about XP anymore.
Mm-mm.
So it is,
that's long gone.
Why I say if you are still running Windows XP, your machine is owned, and I hope you didn't have any private data on it.
That's the truth.
I'm sorry, I can't.
Yeah, it is what it is.
We've been saying from the beginning, keep up, keep up, keep up, and people are saying, "Well, I don't have anything."
I also get. Well, it's working fine for me. I don't do that much on it. All you got to do is go on the internet, and you're going to get infected.
And I hope they haven't sold access to your machine to somebody who wants to put child porn.
Yeah,
store child porn on it. You know, stuff like that. People scoff at that stuff, but that really happens. That's true stuff. So if you're still running XP, you've got a real problem. And if you're still running 7, you've got a small problem.
Yeah,
for a
it's
while,
still an issue. Yeah. Either way you cut it, I mean, it's still an issue, and you know it's scary.
Yep.
And like I say, folks keep getting ticked off. Well, I just had it clean, or I just did the cleaning, and I got to do it again. Well, yeah, you're running an old operating system. Hello. It's got more holes in it than Swiss cheese.
Yep. I tell people that all the time. They say, how often should I run the Security Tango? I say, you should do a full one, and that's a long, involved process, and I get that.
Mm-hmm.
But you should do a full one to make sure your machine is clean. But if you are running the latest Windows operating system, then really the general maintenance stuff, making sure you have an antivirus that's up to date, once a week, maybe run the anti-malware thing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If you're running Windows 7, that's pretty much sufficient. If you're running XP, you could run the Security Tango constantly and it still won't protect your
machine.
Every night. No, constantly, 24 hours a day, and it still won't protect your machine.
Yeah, no.
It just won't.
It can't.
Because, even the stuff in the Security Tango requires
it can
at
only
least
do so much,
of,
yeah, and it's exactly. Looking for other programs to patch those holes and everything else. But when you're doing the running, say, like super anti-spyware or malware bytes that goes ahead and removes all that stuff, and you're still running on old XP, the minute you go back into the website and the history and everything else and go to those websites, bam, it's all going to come back.
Yep.
Yeah, and it's going to be just a vicious circle. Around and around you're going to go, and you're never going to win that one.
Right. It's like you said, how did I get infected again?
Yeah.
You used your computer.
Yeah.
And you're running XP. That's how it happened.
And that's all you got to do is turn it on, go to the internet, bam.
Right. And people cannot expect you or anybody to keep their machines clean when they're still running an outdated operating system. And that definitely means XP. And it sort of means 7. I mean, 7, I get it. People don't want 8.1. And I believe me when I tell you I get it. So if you want to wait for 10, I'm gonna cut you a little slack on that.
You're right.
But if you're still running XP, no slack.
Mm-mm.
There's nothing we can do to help you.
Right.
The stuff is even disappearing from the knowledge base.
Well, I even get folks that get very ticked off because they're running XP, and they go, well, that's highway robbery. He's forcing me to upgrade. I don't have that kind of money to throw around. Well, sorry, but like anything else, the price of poker keeps going up, and
if you don't want to spend money on an operating system, get Linux.
Yeah.
I said, I'm running it on some very old equipment, which is now speedier than my newest laptop with Windows 8. So,
and you can get into it, though, correct me if I'm wrong, you can get into Linux pretty much, you know, install it in that and fumble your way around.
You don't even have to fumble. Take a look at Linux Mint, which looks very much like XP. It does. It looks like XP or 7. I mean, it looks like, you know.
And you'll be comfortable.
Right.
And you'll have an operating system, won't have as many holes.
Yes, you won't have Microsoft Office, but you will have an Office suite that works very much the same way. And the thing that makes me crazy is people say, I can't learn that. Nonsense. And I will use stronger words if you like. They learned Windows the first time. They weren't stupid then. They're not stupid now. All right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I got to say, I like that. He's the selector, and the show is called Foreground Music. Nice choices. Nice choices. All right. Chromebook sales are on the rise, I'm delighted to report, since I've written two books about Chrome. One book about Chromebooks. Even though consumers don't really have a good handle on them. Global Chromebook sales are targeted to reach 7.3 million units in 2015, a 27% jump from the 5.7 million sold in 2014, according to research firm Gartner. They said that on Thursday. But it's mainly schools followed by consumers pushing the numbers higher and not businesses. Since the first model launched in mid-2011, Google's Chromebook has seen success mainly in the education segment across all regions, Gartner analyst Isabel Duran said in a press release. In 2014, the education sector purchased 72% of Chromebooks in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, known as the EMEA region, Europe, Middle East, and Africa, 69% in Asia Pacific, and 60% in the U.S. The consumer market will likely account for 40% of this year's sales in the U.S., 27% in the EMEA region, and 15% in Asia Pacific. But businesses will generate just 1.1% of Chromebook sales in the U.S., less than 1% in EMEA, and 16.5% in Asia Pacific. An alternative to more expensive mainstream PCs, Chromebooks are low-cost laptops designed primarily to access the internet and run online applications, although many of them run offline. Powered by Google's Chrome OS, Chromebooks are sold by vendors such as Hewlett-Packard, Samsung, and Dell, and are targeted to buyers who don't need or want full-featured Windows notebooks. The education market has been snapping them up. The business crowd hasn't been so eager, though that may change over time. A possible reason for the discrepancy between schools and businesses? Many businesses are still ingrained with traditional Windows PCs outfitted with standard-supported software, whereas schools can be more flexible as they don't have the same tight requirements. While purchases of Chromebooks remain low among businesses, there has been some interest from small and mid-sized businesses, or SMBs. Google itself has been trying to win over business users by making more apps and services available offline. The company has also introduced Chromebook for Work, which tries to target businesses with such features as single sign-on, where you only need to enter your login credentials once to be valid for any app or service you need to access, as well as better management of Chrome devices and richer graphics. Google has also been trying to target Chromebooks to businesses by offering more flexible pricing options, such as an annual subscription of $50 per device per year that includes management and support of the devices. Many potential buyers remain unaware of what a Chromebook is and can do, according to Gartner. The challenge for Google is to increase audience understanding of a Chromebook, most notably outside the U.S. So, are you using a Chromebook? What for? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
And we should, of course, say Happy Veterans Day.
I had a note to do that right at the beginning. We definitely want to thank all those of you, including Dave,
who have
put their bodies between us and harm and kept this nation safe and secure throughout its long history. Monday is Memorial Day. I know you're going to be spending time with family and friends and cookouts and stuff. Take a moment in silent reflection to remember those who have gone before us and are not there to support us because they gave that last full measure of devotion. And if you really, really want to honor the vets, volunteer or at a vet center or donate to Wounded Warriors or a veteran outreach program. That's probably something you should do. Chromebooks, on the other hand, I love my Chromebook. I use it all the time. I use it for everything. There are very few things you cannot do on a Chromebook, the average user. And I'm more than the average user, and I still find myself doing things on it all the time, like I said. I have it here with me now. I use it for everything. I do programming on it. People who tell you they cannot use a Chromebook to do something are either using a special proprietary Windows-only program or they have no imagination. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Joel from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Joel. What's up?
Hello, gentlemen. A couple things. First of all, the gentleman who called earlier about uninstalling from Windows 8.
Yes.
There are a couple easy ways to do that. From the start screen, you can just type uninstall, and that will bring up the uninstall control panel.
Right.
The other thing is you can either right-click or long-press on any tile and get an uninstall command, which will take you to, which will directly uninstall that app. So there's kind of neat stuff.
Yep, thank you. And that's the thing that I honestly don't like about Windows 8. There's a lot of really amazing ways to do things, and nobody tells you about them. Hidden knowledge is not useful knowledge.
Well, yeah, exactly right. And I've been teaching classes on Windows 8 since it came out, and I've found that once the logic of it is explained to people,
right,
they get it. But you're right. You're exactly right. Nobody explains it. Computers don't come with manuals anymore, so people are sort of left on their own.
Yep.
And it's unfortunate.
Taking a class is a really good idea. I wonder where people could get a class.
Well, I happen to run the Tech Age Adult Computer Learning Center at the JCC.
There you go. That's enough of that. It's not an ad.
I didn't call it a plug-it.
I know. I just want people to know that there are places they can go to actually learn this stuff.
Yeah.
We tend to forget that if we stepped outside of our houses, we may actually gain some knowledge we can use at our computer desks. And so it's important to know that there are places like Tech Age where people can learn this stuff and become more productive. It's not terribly expensive. It doesn't take weeks of your time. Well, it does, but not all at once. You come away with less frustration at your desktop. How is that a bad thing? Okay, sorry.
Right.
What was the next thing you wanted to say?
I heard something on another radio talk show, Leo Laporte, quote, the tech guy.
Yeah.
Last week was asked a question about malware bytes, and his comment was, with Windows 8, you don't need any of that stuff. All you need is the built-in Windows Defender.
Yeah.
And that kind of surprised me, and I know you guys have...
And it should surprise you.
Other stuff, so I wanted to hear
he
your
drank
comments
the Kool-Aid.
On that.
He well, drank the Kool-Aid.
First, Joel, let me say how disappointed I am that you strayed.
Really?
I'm here every week. I don't stray.
Jeez Louise.
But he is partially correct, actually, which is often the case. But never mind that. Here's the thing. Windows Defender is probably the best antivirus program Microsoft has ever put out. That's damning with faint praise. I still think Malware Bytes is essential and does a much better job than Windows Defender. The big thing is it gets updated a lot more frequently. I'm not saying Windows Defender is bad, but Windows Defender doesn't get updated as regularly. So any new viruses have a much longer, new malware, have a much longer, wider, bigger, whatever you want to call it, window, no pun intended, on a Windows machine if you're using Defender than if you're using Malwarebytes. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Yeah, that's the big thing. And the same is true from antivirus. Not that their products are bad, but that they don't get updated as frequently as AVG or Avast or anything else. Clear? Oh, I think he's gone. Okay.
Yeah.
He's not wrong in the depth of detail he went to, but he didn't go far enough. Everybody should think at least about taking at least an introductory class somewhere to learn a little bit about the machine they're using, because as Joel said, you don't get a manual anymore. You have no previous knowledge. With 7, if you had used XP, you knew how things worked. It's just different. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Charles from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Charles. What's up?
Yeah, hi, guys. So when I do backup, that everybody is an absolute must, you guys harp on all the time, understandably so. What I do is I have my external hard drive or a flash drive, and I'm saving things that are really important that I need, like pictures, video, etc. But I don't really know, I'm ashamed to say, how to do a full system-wide backup. And I think a lot of the audience might have that same question. And as a follow-up to that, is there also an easy way, you're speaking about the browsers and the operating system, is there an easy way for me to also save my bookmarks in Firefox and my favorites in Explorer? And I'll take your answer offline, and thanks so much, guys.
Yeah, all right, thanks. That's actually an excellent question. I'll take the second one first. No. There's no easy way. You have to know where they are.
Yeah.
And they're just files called bookmark and bookmark.back, actually. There's two versions. But you have to know where they are, and they're hidden deep in your system. But yes, it is possible to back them up. Once you know where they are, you can create a batch file that actually does all the hard work for you. We have something of that on the website somewhere. I'll have to find it. I apologize. I can't do everything at once, and that's normally Steve's job. Doing a full system backup is not possible from inside Windows, because Windows will not back up open files. And thousands, and I mean this literally, thousands of files are open when Windows is running. So what you have to use is an external backup program, and there are any number of them that will do that. The problem with full backups, however, is that if there is an issue in your system, a virus, malware, or a problem in the registry, those things will get backed up as well. So what I tell people to do is, before you start mucking about on the internet or do any of that nonsense, get your machine set up the way you want it, and then do a full backup. Once you have, and that goes on a CD or a really enormously huge thumb drive or a large external drive. And once you have done that, then only when you change programs or add programs or whatever do you really need to change to do that full backup again. But if you were to create, a batch file that backed up your entire Firefox directory and all the directories under it, and your entire Internet Explorer directory and all the directories under it, your entire Chrome directory, whatever, you'd get all the bookmarks, you'd get all that stuff. You also get a bunch of useless data, but then it's you know, too much is better than not enough when you're backing up. If you back up everything under your username, it's a fairly large set, but you will get all the things that you need. Now, restoring is an issue, because you may again be backing up things that you don't necessarily, if, for example, you lose your bookmarks in Firefox, you don't want to do a restore of your whole thing, because you will then roll back some programs you might not want to roll back. So restoring becomes a you know, restore just the Firefox folder instead of everything. But to back up, if you backed up, I'm pretty sure if you back up your entire user directory, you'll get everything. Except yeah. external programs like, for example, Intuit. QuickBooks.
QuickBooks, yeah.
QuickBooks makes its own set of directories at the root level of your hard drive. And if you don't back those up separately, you have no backup.
Or in the program, tell it to back it up elsewhere.
Or tell it to back it up under documents or whatever. Right, right, right. But if you just accept all the defaults, it goes somewhere that's not right.
And it's not going to be there when you go to restore it.
That's exactly right. So
And don't back up the programs. It's only the data.
Right, right, right. If you've done that full system backup, and remember, if you do a full system backup and then you do a full system restore, everything you did in that machine since then is gone. So you know, people, it's not the panacea that you think it is. In many cases, it's more a placebo than a panacea. So you want to be very careful. All right. That's it. Somehow, for no discernible reason, you have wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense. But in case you're a slow learner, you get the chance to do it again, because we're going to take a slightly longer break, but we'll be back with a whole another hour of this nonsense. Stick with us, because we hate to be here alone. We'll be back with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you for a whole nother hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites, right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's Xerox Rochester International Jazz Festival. Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Just like Linda did from Greece, New York. Hi, Linda. What's up? Linda? Linda?
Hold on.
Technical difficulties. Technical difficulties have occurred, and we will see what happens in just a moment. And who's this?
Linda.
It's Linda. Okay, Linda, what's up?
Okay. question. With my old router, I was able to use my iPad and my Android tablet to print from my wireless printer. Since I got the new AO router, I could print from my Android tablet, but it no longer can find the AirPrint.
AirPrint, your old router was an Apple router, right?
No, it was an N router. It was a Linksys N.
Oh, okay.
And now I've got the Linksys AO.
Ah. Okay, so the problem is that on the Linksys AO, you want to be able to print from the iPad.
Right, I can't anymore.
Okay, no, I get that. I get that. You should be able to connect it. There's an article on the Windows, on the Apple support community. The problem is that it's,
Nick, I've already read that article. It doesn't help.
Yeah, according to the Apple article on this wireless print serving. Was not originally, at least, a supported configuration for iOS. And you need AirPrint itself. So the question becomes, does that... Now, what printer do you have?
I have an HP wireless printer. With the old N router, I had no problems. It print AirPrint off my iPad, no problems. I've still got the same printer. But now I've got the Linksys AO router, and for some reason, it can't find AirPrint now. It can find it from my Android tablet, but it can't find it from...
You may have to... Well, I think you have to reset it up.
Well, I had somebody come over from the Geek Squad and from my friend works for Staples, and they tried. They tried for an hour, and they couldn't figure out how to do it. And I can't either. And I've got a lot of articles on my iPad I want to print. Now I can't do it.
Yeah, of course. All right. I don't offhand, I don't know, because theoretically, you just have to be on the same network and... You have to be using a printer that will connect wirelessly, which you are.
Which I have.
Which you are. Then you have to have... you have to be on the same network, which clearly you are because you only have one router.
Right.
And you theoretically should... It should be as simple as... Picking the, you should see it on your iPad and print. And the Android works fine, right?
Yeah, no problem with the Android.
This is a stumper, Linda.
Yeah, on the Android one, there is, I can even print from my, Nick, you're going to love this. You're going to love this very much. I went back to the Galaxy S5.
There you go.
Even though I sold it to you, I went back to it.
It's a great
print for my Galaxy S5. Anything Android, Apple will not do it. Why? Are they not up to date with the AO technology?
They may not be, and I'd have to do a little more research into that. Steve might have known, but sadly, Steve is not here today. But yeah, it's very possible that the AO. No, it can't be that. I was about to say the AO router may not understand AirPrint, but the Android is printing from it.
Yeah.
So it's got to be just a problem with the iPad.
Yeah. Well, I've got a full iPad, and I've got two iPad minis, and I can't do it on any of them.
Yeah. So what it sounds like is the iPad is not able to support, or is not able to connect. It does not support printing over that particular router, which is really weird.
I thought so.
You can connect and go out to the internet, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, I can use it, no problem. Everything, just I can't print.
I wonder if it's a channel issue.
I don't know. The guy set up. I've got four ports on the back, 1 through 4, and he put it in one. And I called him up and I said to him, "Should I change it?" He goes, "That shouldn't make any difference."
No, that's not going to make a difference. Well, by channel, there are multiple channels for the radio signal. Most systems use either 6 or 11, and if you're Steve's got an answer.
Steve says Apple's latest devices are 802.11ac.
Yeah, that doesn't tell me anything.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I don't know, Linda. We're going to have to do some research on this one. I do not have an answer out of the top of my head, and I am sorry.
Oh, that's okay. Hey, I finally stumped the girl. straight.
Yeah, you did. You stumped us. Thank you.
No, it's wait a minute. No,
weekend,
no.
Guys.
In defense of us, that's out of our element. The guy that can answer
well,
it isn't
true.
Here.
That's
so she
true.
Didn't stump us.
She stumped Steve who's not here.
Steve's not here, so that's not fair.
We just dump it on Steve. He's the one who got stumped.
Nice. It's his fault.
Nice.
He's not here. Sorry, I don't know jack about apples.
Yeah.
Or Macs.
I'm sure there's just, you know, of course, you know, if half a dozen other people couldn't help her either, that's an issue. I'm sure somebody out there knows the answer. And I'm sure Linda is still listening. So it may just be the way the thing is set up. Maybe the wrong security. Maybe the wrong channel. That stuff. So it might be that I'm shocked she can't even see it, and that you can see it on the Android. I'm not going to get even. You know, if Steve was here, I would be touting the superiority of the Android operating system over the iOS operating system just to annoy him. But the reality is that I'm shocked that it cannot do both.
All right. He says, we have seen routers block Bonjour services like AirPrint. May be called M, then capital DNS in the router's setup.
So she may be blocking MDNS, or as they call it, Bonjour.
Mm-hmm.
But then why would she be able to print from the Android? Because it doesn't use Bonjour. It uses a different. Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Bonjour is a protocol that Apple uses to connect to wireless printers. But Android will use a different protocol. And it may well be, that's a good thought. That Bonjour or MDNS is being blocked by the new router, or simply not turned on by you know, not actively maliciously blocked, just not turned on.
Mm-hmm.
So she may maybe get a Geek Squad person back to turn on MDNS, or they might call it Bonjour, and because Apple uses their own, you know, God forbid Apple should call it MDNS. And that's an excellent
point.
That
wouldn't be them.
That's a good point. That's a very good point. All right. I have to admit, I try not to print anymore, ever. I print out the news for here because handling paper is easier in this situation. But other than that, I try never to print everything. About half a dozen times I've thought about setting up wireless printing at home because it's easy enough to do.
Yeah.
But I don't print, so.
Yeah, why bother?
Yeah. All right, to the news. And you, of course, can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. A Google Plus update from well-connected Android blogger Artem Rusakovsky said that the Mountain View-based firm may release another significant update at Google I/O later this month. The boost to the operating system of the wearable devices, that's Android Wear, will also add compatibility for Android Wear watches with built-in speakers because it will give the possibility of on-watch phone calls. And, of course, that requires speaker support. It is notable that currently there are no Android Wear watches with built-in speakers, but it is expected that the addition of new software functions would open up the door to such hardware enhancements. Rumors are strong that the addition of a new feature would give device owners the chance to receive audible notations and notifications and even chat on the phone using the speaker of the smartwatch. Great. I already don't like listening to people who are talking with the speaker, you know, speaking to the phone in front of them. And then
they feel they got to yell into it because they can hear them better.
The only reason people do that is because they see them doing it on television and they think that's the way you're supposed to use a phone because they're not that bright. And the reason that they do it on television is so that we, the listener, can hear both ends of the conversation. Or if you're actually with somebody else and you want them to hear the other end of the conversation, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But to be standing by yourself,
yeah,
in a place and shouting into your phone so everybody can hear your conversation. You're actually not that important. Stop it. All right. I've said enough about that. So do you actually want to make phone calls off your watch? Don't.
Right.
But give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And our next caller is Joe from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's up?
Hello, guys. A couple of things that might help a couple of callers. I'm not real familiar with the iPad with the printer, but I've seen it on PCs where if you change the router and you still have the printer installed on a PC, the printer might be looking for the old IP address and get confused.
So there's a possibility.
Away in the iPad, she can go in and delete the printer and then have it redetect it. It might pick up the new IP address.
That's actually an excellent point. It shouldn't be. It should be looking for it, it should be looking for the service.
Right.
But you're right. Once it's set up, it may be locked into an IP address.
Right.
And if that address has changed, that's a good point. So, Linda, if you're listening, delete the AirPrint printer on your iPad and then do a search for a new one. If it's showing up on there at all, that makes sense. Good
right.
point, Joe. Thanks.
Sure. And then the other one of the callers calling about backing up his bookmarks, like I think in Firefox and Chrome.
Right.
If he just goes into the bookmark manager and just exports them into his document folder or his desktop or somewhere, they'll be there as an HTML file, and he can save them on a disk or wherever.
Right.
Drive,
That's
and
right.
Then he's got them.
That's exactly right. And I tend not to think of that because I think backup, I think automation.
Right.
But you're absolutely right. You can do it by hand from the bookmark manager.
Yes. Overthinking is bad sometimes.
Yeah,
I do it
all
the time.
It is.
Like, is it plugged in?
right.
Okay, guys. Have a great weekend.
Well, thank you, Joe. Those were excellent thoughts. Thanks.
Okay.
This is one of the things I most love about this show is that people call in and give us good answers. And then and that makes sense. None of us is as smart as all of us. And all of those other aphorisms. So we love it when people call in and help.
Yeah, because they just might have another out take on it, and nothing wrong with that. You know, having multiple opinions are a better way just to do it.
Yep. I never actually got to pontificate on my Chromebook, and I'm going to do it because I love my Chromebook. I'll do that unless somebody calls in. I'll do that after. After the next, you just don't want me to talk about the Chromebook. Going to take a quick break. Dave Enright, who hates Chromebooks, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and I'd like to give a little shout-out to all those places who are playing our show in their places of business. What would be interesting is to compile a list of those and put them on our website.
That'd be cool.
Let me figure out how to do that, way is to do that.
Yeah.
But if you do have, if you do play us, if you're listening right now and you're in a store, and you actually own or run or somehow are involved with that store, drop me a note at nick@soundbites.org, and I will figure out a way to put a list of all of the places you can hear Soundbites in Rochester when you're out and about.
Member supported Jazz 90.1.
Yep, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dino from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dino. What's up?
Hey, just a thought back on your print problem.
Yeah.
I think he's right. Doing a hard reset, you got 3 to 5 seconds to enter a new admin password on most routers.
Yep.
But in the meantime, when you go to print, you have an option. Normally, most Apple and iOS, you can do a drop-down print PDF and export that PDF to yourself and mail it. And it's a workaround, but another step in the process. You can still print from your other piece of hardware.
Right. That's a good thought. Thank you, Dino.
Yeah, no problem.
Excellent. Thank you. Yes.
Right.
Yes. So, he's right. You can instead of printing to the printer directly, you can save the page as a PDF and then send that to your Android device, which you know, mail it to yourself and open the mail on your Android device, print it from there. Yeah, but we'd like to solve the thing directly. But yes, absolutely. Good thought, Dino. Thanks. Speaking of cool toys, this is one of my favorites. A new Chrome extension can instantly share URLs among nearby devices using sound to broadcast the information to microphones. Google Tone, T-O-N-E, is an experimental feature that could be used to easily share browser pages, search results, videos, and other pages among devices in an office, classroom, or family setting, according to Google research. While it can't pass through walls or travel beyond earshot, the system is designed to make sharing browser URLs as easy as talking to people nearby. The initial prototype used an efficient audio transmission scheme that sounded terrible, so he played it beyond the range of human hearing. Researcher Alex Kaufman and software engineer Boris Schmooz wrote in a post on the Google Research blog. While microphones on laptops and video conferencing devices are optimized for the human voice, the extension incorporates a codec based on dual-tone multi-frequency signaling, or DTMF, a system that has long been used in conventional telephony. Tone works at low volumes and can be used over Hangouts, but it can be affected by speaker volume and microphone sensitivity. When the extension is installed, an icon of a megaphone appears at the top right in Chrome. With the device's volume turned on, sharing a URL is done by clicking on the icon. Users have to be logged into their Google account, and their profile names and photos are displayed alongside the URL in incoming Tone notifications. Does that sound like something you'd use? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. I actually used this the other day. I was with a friend actually in a sports bar.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very noisy.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? It worked perfectly. It sends a
That's cool.
an audible tone, and so he was able to grab the URL I sent him. And I can see this being very useful in a business or in a class.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
You know, so you need to be or over a Hangout. Okay, everybody, here's the URL I want you to go to next. Hit the tone. Everybody gets it. They go there. It's easy. You got to be signed into your Google account. Mm-hmm. We were both using Chromebooks, so that was automatic. You got to be signed into your Google account, but it makes it easy. You don't have to have everybody's email address. You don't have to have any of that nonsense. You just have to be within hearing range, whether over Hangout or local. So I could see it in a classroom. I could see it in a business meeting. You know, everybody open up your laptops. Go into Chrome or open up your Chromebook. Make sure you're signed into Google.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the URL I want you to go to. Grab it, go, you're done. Easy, convenient, fast. It makes a lot of sense. Follow along whatever we're doing, and here's how you do it. I love the idea.
Yep.
It's very, very cool.
One thing I have to make a correction that I was corrected on is Memorial Day is for the soldiers that have passed.
Yeah.
Veterans Day is for the members that are serving.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yes, I know that, and that's why I said both.
Yep. Yep.
You know, pay a tribute to both.
Yep. But yeah, and
our listeners are on top of us.
I realize that, but the reality is that still more people should be volunteering in some sort of veterans program. More people should be contributing to things like Wounded Warriors.
Mm-hmm.
That's really necessary. Not to be political, but it's shameful to me that veterans come home and are ignored, and I don't like
it. Well, that's why I enjoy doing the Honor Flight.
Yeah.
And I'm part of the Patriot Guard, and they're, you know, it always amazes me. We're there because they do take them down to D.C. for an overnight. They go down on a Saturday. They get to see the memorial and everything else, and then they come back on a Sunday. And the Patriot Guard will stand at the airport, what we call a flag line. And to see all these vets, they're Korean and World War II vets, very few World War II vets. I mean, it's getting down there.
Yeah.
But Korean vets and other vets that come back and see us standing there with our flags, saluting them and welcoming them home, which a lot of them, you know, didn't really get.
And that just in the Vietnam era.
And this, they just, you know, it just brings tears to their eyes. These older gentlemen and women, they just can't believe that, wow, they're here and to thank them for serving. It's really cool. I mean, I've been doing it for a few years now, and my only regret is I don't get to go to a lot of the other things that, you know, the Patriot Guard does.
Right.
But it's one of the things I volunteer and do, and I love doing it anytime we can, whether it's a fallen soldier, bringing him home to rest, or, you know, standing outside a funeral home.
Yep.
We'll gladly do it anytime, and, you know, it's a great feeling, and like you say, getting involved. Just getting involved and thanking for the folks, not only, you know, because I did my time, but the other soldiers that are there now, still protecting and making this the land of the free, that, you know, we can still do pretty much what we want to do.
Yep. Yep.
So, you know, again, I thank
those
younger folks.
So take a moment to remember
folks.
The fallen. And like I said, even also take a moment to remember the living who need us still.
Yep.
So there's that.
Both ends.
All right, and you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415, and talk about computers. And if you don't call in, I'm going to talk about my Chromebook.
Go for it.
All righty.
And to correct you.
Uh-oh.
It's not that I don't like Chromebooks. I just haven't had the opportunity to get one.
Yeah, I'll tell you what.
I'm this close to, believe it or not, just to instead of having to always sit at my desktop, you know, at my desk, to be, you know, because now I'm, because I put an extender out there that I can get a signal in that out in the front porch or upstairs. That's no problem. You know, it'd be nice to have a laptop up there just to do stuff, so I don't have to sit there at the desk if I don't want to, or if I think of something, boom, have a Chromebook. It's like you say, they're inexpensive, they work great. Doing up documents or anything else, I do everything through Google Docs, anyways.
Right.
So it's just there, and it's so easy to use. You don't have to know anything. It's just. Yep. Turn it on and go.
It's real easy to use. Like I said, I get 8 to 10 hours of battery life out of the thing. I can do everything I do anytime I want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy. It's ridiculously easy to decide if a Chromebook will work for you. Because the Chromebook is essentially the Chrome browser.
Yeah.
So install the Chrome browser. And whatever extensions you want, they all work. You know, all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And see how long it takes before you have to leave the browser and do something actually in Windows that isn't maintenance on the machine.
Mm-hmm.
And I set that challenge for myself, and I discovered that except for one or two programming things that I was too lazy to go and find a way to do it online.
Slacker.
And I was, and I finally found a way to do them online because I wanted to do them not sitting upstairs at the desk. And I can do everything I need to do through that Chromebook, which means, and the beautiful thing there, of course, is that the Chromebook is so very secure. There are no viruses for it. If you did get a virus, all you have to do is turn it off and back on again because the operating system is read-only. Viruses that come in cannot get a foothold on the device. It's very, very cool the way they do that. It kind of amazes me, and it's very nicely done. All right, our next caller is Chuck, who's on a cell phone. What's up, Chuck?
Hi. I have a question with USB drives.
Yeah.
Would you be able to tell me how the drive letters are assigned and who keeps track of that? I have a drive that I use for backup, plug it in once a week or so for backup. Every time I plug it in, it's got a new drive letter assigned to it, so now I got to go through the mechanism and reconfigure it, and then the next time it gives it another drive letter. Who maintains that drive letter assignment?
First of all, are you putting it in the same port every time?
Pardon?
Are you putting it in the same outlet each time?
No, I'm not. I've got four outlets coming out from a panel.
That's why it's changing, because you've got to be consistent. You've got to put it in the same outlet port. So if you've got a USB, say, splitter, where it's got the four on the front, if you put it in position one, and because it assigns the letter, you know, the drive letters across, one, two, three, and four, the additional letters, whether it be F, G, H, or whatever. Okay. So if you put it in one the first time and set it up that way, if you do it again, you've got to put it back in that same port. Or otherwise, if you put it in slot two, it's going to be the next letter up.
Okay, so the drive letter is not somewhere stored on the drive itself, but...
in the device. No, because
it's assigned to the port.
Right.
On the motherboard or on the system.
On the system that when you hook up that USB, say, hub, it knows, oh, there's four additional ports. It's just like on the back of your PC. You know, you've got, say, three or four at least USB ports on the back there.
I was under the impression those were dynamic and they followed the drive wherever you plugged it into. So you could plug it into another laptop.
Well, theoretically, yes.
Yes.
But here's the thing. When you plug something into, when you plug a USB drive into your machine, Windows will give it the next available drive letter. The question, of course, is what's the next available drive letter? When you use a USB drive and then remove it, there is a period of time, which could be hours, before that drive letter is released for use.
Oh. Okay.
So let's say you put in one and it's D, and about 3 hours later you put in a different one and it's E, and then you put the first one and it's going to be F because E has not yet been released.
Right, okay. And even though you've gone through the remove the drive safely and now it's okay to remove the drive, it still is holding that letter reserved.
Right, the letter has not been logically released by the operating system.
Okay. All right, got it.
Yeah, so that's an issue that Microsoft has never really...
Yeah, it's kind of squirrely and subtle.
Yeah.
Until you figure out what it is.
Yep.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. Okay.
All right. Bye.
Yeah, that's because Microsoft uses drive letters and because it assigns them randomly. And because it has a timeout feature for how long it keeps one, you can never really be absolutely certain on a removable drive what
right.
drive letter it will get.
Just the way it is.
It's just, it is what it is. And there you are. With built-in drives or permanent drives
mm-hmm.
of whatever sort. They generally they get letters at startup and the first one will always be C and the next one that boots up will always be D, et cetera, et cetera. If you have a USB drive that is constantly plugged in, it will generally get the same drive letter, every time. But if you have one that you take out and put in and et cetera, that's a separate issue and there's no promises. All right, we're going to take a quick break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you, 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites, and we are right here every dang Saturday on the longest, on Jazz 90.1, your member-supported jazz station.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. You can still get in on the fun. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. In the meantime, here's a news item. Microsoft is finally closing a major gap in its Office mobile app portfolio. Jared Spataro, general manager of Microsoft Office 365 Marketing, announced on May 19th that the company had released preview versions of Word, Excel, and PowerPoint for Android smartphones, such as Samsung's new flagship, the Galaxy S6. Microsoft released a limited version of Office for Android tablets last November before opening up the early access program to all comers after the new year. The Office for Android phone apps are modern, optimized for touch, and designed for work on the go. First, Microsoft is requiring prospective beta testers to register with the Office for Android community on Google+. Once registered, users can click on the respective Word, Excel, and PowerPoint links. Then they wait. They wait for about 4 hours as Google Play takes time to replicate permissions, then click the links and follow the download links to install the apps using the Google Play Store. That's according to the instructions for the Microsoft Office for Android's Google Plus page. Bringing these apps to preview first provides you with an early look at the apps while enabling us to gather critical user feedback, helping us shape and improve the app experience on a wide range of Android phones across the world, Spataro added. The feedback we received from the Office for Android tablet preview in January was critical to ensuring a high-quality and consistent Office experience across Android tablet devices. As in the iOS versions of the apps, a consistent user experience that transcends device type and operating system is key to Microsoft's vision of mobile-enhanced productivity. Embracing Google's Android ecosystem fits with Microsoft's mobile-first product strategy. Despite a surge in the iPhone's popularity, due in no small part to the record-breaking debut of the iPhone 6 and iPhone 6 Plus, Android still dominates the smartphone scene. In February, International Data Corporation, or IDC, an IT analyst group, announced that the mobile operating system had nabbed 81.5% of the smartphone market in 2014 on shipments of over 1 billion units. Apple iOS took the number two spot with nearly 15% of the market and shipments of 192.7 million iPhones. So are you actually interested in running Office on your phone, in particular on your Android phone?
Yeah.
Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. My suspicion is that many of the people who have Android phones are using Google Drive and writing all their docs and sheets and presentations in those applications. I could be wrong, but and as I've said many times, I do all my stuff in Google Drive now, and I still share word processing documents and spreadsheets and presentations with my colleagues who use Microsoft Office,
mm-hmm.
and they don't know I'm not on Office.
Yeah, and
they just don't know.
Yeah, it's a little much to have it on the phone.
Yeah,
yeah.
I know that one of the big cash cows for Microsoft is Office, but as to how many Android people are actually going to use it, that's an interesting point.
Yeah, because that's one thing that's never failed for them.
Right.
Their word processor and, you know, their suite of Office, you know, as far as word processing and all, those have all, unlike their operating systems, which
yep.
totally do a nosedive sometimes.
Yep. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Greece, New York. Welcome, Gary. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm hoping that you can sort out something for me. I have an external hard drive that's plugged into a router via a USB cable. And I can see the contents of that hard drive. I can even access the existing contents. But when I go to the drive and ask it to create a new folder, I get a window that says, a little pop-up that says, destination folder access denied. You need permission to perform this action.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to either try again or cancel.
Right.
Is that supposed to be like that, or is there something that I can do to fix it?
Well, when you've got it on the router, yeah, it thinks it's its own device, just like a server or anything else, and the rights aren't set up for that.
What you have to do is, and I can't give this to you directly because every model of every drive is different, but what you basically need to do is there's a setup somewhere connected with that drive. And one thing you have to do is you have to tell it that user X, and that's you, and it's the same username and password that you use on Windows, right?
Mm-hmm.
It has read and write access to that drive. One way you can do that often is by logging in as the administrator of that machine, right? That that drive should have a username and password associated with it. Or maybe the, you use your administrator username and password. And then you give full read-write access to that drive to your username that you use every day.
Okay. All right. I guess I'll have to do a little digging. The administrator part is sort of invisible to me. When I turn on my computer, it doesn't ask for a password.
Right.
Like
Nick said, it might not, depending on the particular drive. What you might have to do is go to that drive. Matter of fact, you might have to unplug that drive, hook it into your computer, go over to that drive, and there's usually another subfolder that came with that drive that has all these utilities for setting it up on a network.
Okay.
So, and you can set everything up there, define the username, password, and everything else, and the rights.
Right. I hate to tell you this, but you may have to look at the manual.
Oh, if all else fails, read the directions?
Exactly.
You got
RTMF, it. RTMF, read the manual first.
Okay.
And it'll probably tell you there's a folder, run this particular program, here's the default username and password, which you should change. And then you can give yourself or whoever rights and permissions to any set of folders and subfolders.
Okay. I will try that.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right. Bye.
Yeah. Almost nothing comes with a manual anymore. But if it does, read it.
Yeah. Well,
because it's important.
It comes with the manual just in a different form. It's not printed off. It's usually on the particular device.
As a PDF, generally.
Yeah, PDF, and you got to go in there, like on this particular drive, you got to do that.
Yep. So. You'll be able to read it because it'll be readable, and that'll tell you what else you have to do. Yeah, nobody, two things really porked me off this last week. The fact that nobody puts out any sort of information about anything anymore, no manuals. And secondly, Linux does, but neither Apple nor Microsoft provides a programming language anymore. Mm-hmm. And those two things made me just angry this week. I'm old and I'm crotchety and I'm not even going to apologize for it.
Get over it.
I spent a long time getting to the point where I can say I'm old and crotchety and I'm not going to apologize for it. And I'm happy to be here.
As I tell folks,
get off my lawn.
Build a bridge, get over it.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's
at our age, we can tell that.
Right.
Too bad.
Some devices are, in fact, plug and play, but many are not. And one of the things that I keep telling people is that you can't any longer just be a user. You also have to be an administrator.
Yeah.
You know, companies get the luxury of hiring people who do administration for a living. If you have any complexity in your home at all, you have to be the administrator for that. For people like Dave and Steven and for me, it's easy because it's what we do. And so we don't think twice. Oh, I have to hook this up. I got to go here. I got to do this.
It's done instinctively,
Right. For the average user, most things are not just plug and play. So you really, particularly an off-machine device like a USB hard drive that's actually plugged into the router. That makes it very convenient for everybody in the household to use it, but it has to be set up before everybody in the household can use it.
Right.
And once you do, of course, then you can automate backups and do anything you want with it. I mean, anything you want with it. Share data with people, prevent people from sharing data, whatever you want to do. But it has to be set up in order to do that. And so my suggestion is when you do that stuff, first thing you do, grab the manual, read it until you understand it, and then set up the device. Sometimes that doesn't work. I actually have an extender. Dave was talking about extenders. I have an extender that just will not, bless you, will not connect to my network.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I'm beginning to think perhaps it's not me and it's actually the router. All right, we're done for another week. I want to thank every single person who called in. We very much appreciate those who called in to help. So we're done for another week. But, of course, you are not going to turn off that radio or stop that stream because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so that's good. And we'll be back next week with Dave Enright, probably Steve Ray, maybe even me, Nick Francesco, and all of you in the longest-running computer show in the known universe and the unknown universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening. See you in 166 hours.